Accession number 210203.
Trevor Matalas, Reel 3. So you just tell me about the voyage out to East Africa.
Yes, we landed at, we were then entering the Suez Canal, to go through the Suez Canal, and we had to, there's only one-way traffic. What happened was, it's, two ships can't pass at the same time, so they had let so many ships through one way, and that take about 12 hours or more for the go through the Suez Canal. And by the time one convoy of ships had gone one way, and once they get through, then that's like one-way traffic. One lot go first, and then the other lot go, enter into. And as we were going through, then you get all the young, Arabs or whatever they are, with their boots and that. They kept climbing on the ship to sell things to, that sort of thing. And anyway, I can't think of the name of the place now, where I brought them over there.
Mombasa?
We got to Mombasa, but when we got to Mombasa, there was a fire in the railway station, and our battalion had to help to put the fire out. That's the first thing what happened there. And that was why we were going to East Africa. And we had a march pass as well in the town. You know, the battalion... the governor of East Africa, Akemia, was there to for the march pass, and we were on the ship. And we had to get all our uniforms ready, and you know, the light uniforms, iron it all, and do the boots and all that, and the rifles and that, and get ready to for a parade on in the town, Aden. We had to go through in the town and march past, but I didn't do that because I had a job as a medical orderly. They kept me on a ship, so I didn't go. But while they were in town doing this march pass, now they'd done the march pass, and then in the evening while they were coming back towards the ship, the railway railway side and somewhere a whole train or something caught fire. So they our regiment and another regiment what went with us to East Africa were firefighting in the town at Aden. And anyway, that was all over. We got back on the train, and that took about 24 hours. As the train was going along, they only had one railway track, you see, the same there, you see. Trains used to go up to East Africa, and then another lot could come down when the train had gone through. And the train was so slow, because they were old trains at that time. They were like cattle trucks, really, they were. Apart from the officers, they had a proper carriage, or sort of a third-rate carriage for the officers. But we only had cattle pens, and because that took so long, and if you wanted any water to drink, ring like that or anything, we had to get off the train and run up to the engine and get off the engine while the train is still running. That's how slow the train was, and that used to take. It took nearly 24 hours for it to get to Nairobi. Once we got to Nairobi. We then had three tunners. Our advance party had taken the drivers down to Nairobi to wait for us to pick us all up and take the whole battalion, most of the battalion, to Mount Kenya, where we were then going to be set. But what happened was they didn't all go the same. The battalion was split up into about four different camps all around Mount Kenya. Because we had Mount Kenya where I was, with the HQ, because I was a medical orderly for the battalion, and I was at battalion HQ then, you see. And I was, and we had to, our tents were already built for us. We had a marquee for the medical centre, with about seven beds in it, for anybody who was sick. And the advance party had already put the big marquee up for us. Then we had our little tents, what we slept in as well. But because I was a medical orderly and I'd done most of the duty, because I'd been made up to acting lance corporal, and I'd learned a little more about medicine and how to look after people and that sort of thing, and I slept in the marquee I was like an eighth. There were seven beds for sick, and I had one in my own little cubicle, with a what do you call it, a canvas around my bed area where I was, so I was with the patients. If anything happened during the night when I was asleep, I could look after them, you see. But we had orderlies as well. They used to come, and other orderlies as well. But we had to send them out on patrol up in the mountain. So they were never always with us. But we had a medical sergeant as well, and I got letters here from my medical sergeant, where he asked me, he went home to England on one occasion from Kenya, and he sent me two letters, which I got here, asking me if certain person got his glasses, because somebody was bad, his eyes were bad in the army. One of our chaps in the army was in the rugby game, had bad eyesight, and we'd arranged through the medical officer to get glasses for him from Nairobi or wherever they were coming from. And he wrote in a letter, he asked me if I'd received the glasses for this chap. I got the letters there, which you could read. And he was a medical sergeant, but we had a medical officer from the Royal Army Medical Corps. That's the only one who's in, like I said, we had, and then we had an ambulance, and the driver was a Royal Army Service Corps. The ambulance wasn't allowed to be driven by a Rugby Brigade man, only by the Royal Army Medical Corps. Likewise, the doctor, he had to be Royal Army Medical Corps. But the sergeant and myself, I was then made up to a full corporal, and then we had about six orderlies as well for the rest of the battalion. But we had because they were all round the mountain, because I'm talking about hundreds of miles round the mountain, because we were at different base camps, you see, and then they used to relieve one another as well. Like we had a spare company, we had to relieve every company. And like I say, and then on one occasion, we had Lucas, what Floyd, like a big things with wings. What do you call him?
Lucas.
We had I went over to. We had to go and get our meals from the mess, for the sick bed, for the sick patients. And on one occasion, when I went over to get all the meals for them and brought them back on a tray, it carried on for about 24 hours or not. Lucas, nothing. The sky was black, and they were only about 6 foot above a head. And they all land. You see, they land and they take everything they can eat. Everything, but as it happened, I had all the meals and that, what I was bringing across from one tent with the mess hut to with the hospital tent. I had them covered up with the lids and that, so they never got at them. But they took all the vegetation that there is, everything. Lucas, on that okay. But no, I spent most of my time in the camp at the base of Mount Kenya, the nearest town where we were was a little village called Nanuki, and the wages we got out there in Kenya was very, very small, but in Kenya that wasn't pounds, shillings and pence, that was shillings only, shillingi, they called them shillingi, and I went one day in the ambulance, we had a Land Rover as well for our doctor. We had a Land Rover or a Jeep, and I went one day with a Jeep in town with the driver, and he was a Rugby Brigade driver though, he was, because that's a doctor was allowed to have a Rugby Man driver, but we must have a Rugby Man doctor, if you know what I mean. Otherwise, everyone was Rugby Brigade. But anyhow, he took it in the one day, and I went to the bank in Nanuki, a little village called Nanuki. I was a cowboy sort of town, and I had a few shillings in my pocket for my wages, and I started up a bank account, a post office account, and I got the post, I got it there, my post office. But because my demand number's coming up again, my 5 years was nearly up when I started this account off, I had to draw it out again. I drew it out 19 shillingi, what they call 19 shillingi, and I only had 20 in it, so I still got one shillingi in, still, in that book. And I wanted to send that up to Kenya to see if they can make up any credit what they do me. But I never got no answer. Whether the bank had gone from there and gone to Nairobi or wherever, I don't know. But no, I thought I'd try, give it a try and write to them. I knew where I got the address in Nanuki post office, you see, where And
what kind of medical conditions were you dealing with in the army?
Well, on one occasion, one of the chaps lost his leg. What happened was, we had in Kenya, like I do now, British Army or the British services, the RAF, send out maybe four or five. If it's a war front somewhere, like in Kenya, Bamamo, we had to supply the army had to be supported by aircraft, and they had some aircraft out there. I don't know what they were, whether they were Spitfires or whatever they were. I can't remember. Because they were coming from Nairobi Airport, you see, really. For Nairobi, and we were 90 miles away at Mount Kenya. I used to take 90 miles to go to the hospital in Nairobi for the bad cases. Anybody who's really seriously ill, serious, we had to go with our ambulance 90 miles day and night, every day, back and forwards, with bad patients I'm talking about. The minor ones, we used to look after it ourselves in our tents, in my tents, what we had. And then there was lots of soldiers as well. We had to take back some port to Nairobi till we got our doctor trained. My doctor trained me and my sergeant, to give penicillin. Penicillin hadn't been out too long in Germany when we left Germany to go to Kenya. Penicillin hadn't been out too long, and we'd learned how to use penicillin for ailments. But they used to use penicillin as well for anyone who got syphilis or gonorrhea. And we were trained how to use it, and we had to people. And if any of the soldiers used to go on holiday to Mombasa on holiday on the seafront at Mombasa, and they used to come back with syphilis, or well, that was the worst one. Syphilis was the worst, but gonorrhea was regular. There's so many of them, and our medical officer trained us to give so many units, too many injections. For about five injections, we'd get rid of gonorrhea. But then they still had to be watched to see that they don't come back again. Gonorrhea is where you get a discharge from your penis, you see. But gonorrhea is where you get sores and that inside your penis. And they had to put what they call an umbrella up your penis and pull it down and pull the scabs out. That's how bad it was. And you used to a lot of them used to die from it, syphilis. Lots of them died from syphilis. All the African people, thousands and thousands of them died from syphilis. But the British Army and that and the forces, they had more they had the medical experience, and they had the medicine to deal with it, you see. So we got, like I say, the bad case. And first of all, when we first went to Kenya, we had to send them to the hospital to be done if they had gonorrhea and syphilis. But we got trained in, and the medical officer trained us to use penicillin for that purpose, for syphilis cases. And I, on one occasion, my CO, my colonel, and my medical officer, Dr. Lowther, Captain Lowther, which is, I've got his name in the photograph there, between the colonel and the medical officer, asked me to go down to Mombasa by rail. I had to take a long journey down to Mombasa, which took me about 12 hours on a train. But in more comfort this time, we had decent carriages then. They were carriages about third class. I had a carriage. We were sending soldiers on holiday to Mombasa anyhow, but my CEO wanted me to go down there to go to the tent where soldiers can go and take some condoms and cream, which they had to use if they had intercourse with anyone, with some of the Africans or whatever. And I had to go there to see if there was any condoms and that in the cubicle where they were meant to be, and go back to my unit and report that they were there. There was some there. Because a lot of the soldiers used to go back and say there was none there, you see, to be you had. Do you see what I mean? And I went back and reported to my MO about it, and then he must have reported to the colonel as well. And then at the same time, I had a long weekend leave, you see, at the same time. That was the idea of it. He said, my MO said to me, he said, would you like to go down to Mombasa for the long weekend? I said, yeah, I don't mind. Because my sergeant was there, look, it'd take me. Because I used to look after the medical order all the time, you see, during the night and everything. But my mess sergeant, he was a medical, he was in the Royal Brigade as well, but he's a photograph of him there. He used to go to the sergeant's mess and sleep in the sergeant's mess, you see. It was only a tent as well, where he was in Kenya. And But I used to be in the sick bay all the time. And when the medical officer asked me if I would like to go to Mombasa, because my sergeant didn't want to go, you see. So he said he'll go in the sick bay while I go to Mombasa and do what my medical officer wanted me to do, check if there's any condoms in that there. Because their army took condoms. They used to have boxes of about 500 in a box. And I reported back when I got back off the train and reported to my doctor, because my MO, we used to sit together and have a lunch together. That's how well we were as a group, you see. My sergeant, me, and one or two orderlies, what were in our company, in the HQ company. Our two orderlies used to do the bandaging up and then whatever. If somebody hurt themselves on, because in Africa, you get a lot of big spikes in our spines, about that long. And I had them in my feet as well. I got treated by an elephant once on a safari. We went on safari. Nanuki is where the equator is. I go right through the village, I do Nanuki, and the equator is there. And that's where the gates are to the safari park. One entrance, there's other entrances further miles and miles away, but this entrance in Nanuki is, and I went on safari one weekend, and we got chased by baboons, thousands of them, because they sleep in trees, with baboons, do you see? And if you fire a gun or something like that, you get hundreds of them come out of one tree. That's how many there are, hundreds of them out of one tree. But what happened was, we had a three-tonner, two three-tonners, one with the men, what took us, we all got into one, there was about 12 or more of us, in one three-tonner, and the other three-tonner had the tents, what we used, the little bivouacs, and we put them up near the river. When we got into the power, we found the river, and that, we thought that'd be a right place to put down the tents, and that, we'd sleep there for the night, and then move on further into the safari park. But this particular night, the damn a group of elephants come down the river and frightened us all away. We ran like mad, we did. We're being chased by these elephants, but we didn't know that. They were coming down the water. They wanted to get to the water, you see. They spend all the time among the bamboos, East Africa, and that, where Mount Kenya was, and also where the safari park is, there's nothing, only bamboo. And that depends on what height is. The higher you go, the more bamboo you get. But down below, they got more shrubbery, you see. And the baboons and that were in the trees. But the rhino, and there was rhino as well. I've been chased by a rhino and all. Yeah. And I got chased by a rhino, and I had to climb up a damn bamboo tree for that. But as it happened, that went away. But other people had other experiences and that, but I've had two funny experiences. Once on the safari when I was chased by the elephants, and all of us had to run, and we eventually got back to our camp, the base where the lorries were, and they didn't do no real damage. All they wanted to do was get to the water, the elephants didn't. And once they had that fill, they went back up to the higher ground. And anyway, then the other case was, time was, I had to go up to the mountain on one occasion when one of our patrol went on patrol, and he fell. The RAF used to bomb the mountain to try and flush out the Mau-Mau. They were only civilians, really. They used to get promoted by Kenyatta. Kenyatta, he used to vote them. If they killed a white farmer or a white farmer's wife or the children or killed the people who worked for the black ones who worked for them, or if they chopped the legs off a cow or whatever, they got promoted in a rank. But they were civilian. As you see them, they're only in civilians, and they were dirty and black with long black hair and that, and all curled, and they were horrible to look at. What happens? We had instructions that if we caught any, we weren't allowed to do anything to them, hit them or anyway. We got to bring them into custody, back to the we got it written out by the general who was in out in Kenya, Erskine, remember General Erskine?
Yes.
Well, he wrote the letter there, in all different in Swahili. That's written in Swahili, English, and other languages as well. not to do anything what we shouldn't do to the, anyone who we caught among the Mau Mau members.
Was but, that beheaded? Eh? Was that observed?
Mostly it was. If it was anything done back in Nairobi with the Nairobi police, they should do that sort of thing once they got them in the custody. But then what happened was that actually come to an end. Then you see, Mau Mau. What happened was Kenyatta gave up. And they brought all his soldiers from Mount Kenya, but they were in the town doing well. He had sympathisers all in the town, like Ireland, like the trouble in Northern Ireland. We got sympathisers in London and all over the place. He'll do the different sorts of damage, and he had them as well in the town. They were finding out information and passing it back to Kenyatta, and Kenyatta was giving his instructions to people up in the mountain. They were coming down and doing their damage then, you see. And we used to send our patrols up there to try and get them. Well, anyway, he eventually surrendered and said he'd got to finish, stop. And what happened was, a few months later, he became president. He became the position of president. He was up for several years, he was.
And did you ever go out on patrol yourself?
I went up there once, yeah, but that was on a night patrol, but that was only for my experience, because I'd never been up there, you see, up Mount
Kenya. What was it like on patrol?
I hadn't finished. What happened was, this soldier, he went up in, the RAF used to bomb the mountain, and what happened was, they bombed the mountain, And the animals what were up there, the rhinos and elephants and whatever was up on different levels over there, because Mount Kenya was 17,000 feet high. And at different levels you get different kinds of vegetation. And up on the top part it's a snow level, so to speak. Well, the higher you got, you get the... and that's where the RAF you do the bombing, up on the high ground, really. And then the rhino and that used to get wounded from the bombs they used to drop, you see, and that's what made them. And then also the trees were so cut down by the bombs. One of our chaps in our battalion, I mean our company at that time, he was on patrol, stumbled and had a bamboo the stump of a bamboo tree went through his groin here. And that pierced his artery, main artery, and we had to rush him off to hospital and have his arm, leg amputated, on one occasion.
What was it like on the patrol that you went on?
I was more like an observer. I was with we had our own donkeys. Well, we used to take what they call backpack. We used to take our backpack and that thing. Anything was heavy, but the donkeys used to take them up with us, you see. And because you couldn't take a Land Rover or a Jeep up in Mount Kenya, you had to everything was done on foot. And like I say, I was mainly with the people who used to you get a policeman in the police force here looking after a guard dog. They had an African soldier looking after a donkey, and they used to carry the heavy stuff for us up there, and I used to be with him most of the time on it, sort of behind the section what was in front. Well, what happened, you see, you never used to spread out a lot unless you knew there was somebody out up there who you're after. If you knew that, and also the Mau Mau used to use the trees up there as post offices, where they used to post the letters, and more or less. And other people from the Mau Mau used to pick up those letters and pass them on to other people. That was our system of having, getting the information around, by leaving a letter or some form of letter in a tree at a certain place, and picked up by another group, and that's how they used to get their messages around. And that's the sort of thing I but there was nothing on this occasion when I went up. There was nothing special on. We went up there and we didn't have nothing to do, really. We couldn't find anybody, because they must know that we're there in the vicinity, you see. We used to send two or three groups out, about half a dozen men with a donkey and a rifleman and that with a brain gun and rifles and whatever, or machine gun, whatever they might have. And then half a mile away there'd be another one going up. Of course, in the Mount Kenya, they had lots and lots. The Mau Mau had by being there so many years in the mountain, they developed their own tracks and that, if you know what I mean, and we used to use our tracks. And we found out how, and by using our tracks and that, and going off to different points, that's how we found out about where these air post offices were. But also in Africa, in East Africa, the police, mostly the police were either English, East African police, were either English born or Dutch. A lot of them were Dutch out there. The farmers were Dutch as well, most of them. And they were the police. They used to, and we used to send out, and with our section, on some occasion, when they knew that where certain mama were supposed to be in that one particular area, maybe the RAF had spotted some mama in a certain area in the mountain, and we'd send a patrol up, or two or three patrols up, and with them, there'd be a Nairobi or a policeman who live in the vicinity where we were stationed, a policeman in uniform. You know, Kenya policeman, I'm talking about, but white policeman used to go with us up in the mountain a black eye. He used to be a black one as well. He could speak most of the policemen, the white policemen, they spoke East African anyhow. Kikuyu tribe. There were so many languages out there, and that's why they had to have an interpreter who could speak different languages as well, you see. And then also, we had with us, when we came back to our base camp, we had what they call a Adobe man. Adobe man is you used to clean all your laundry and do your ironing and that for you, and starch all your laundry. And that's how it was in the way. But that went on for about 18 months in my case, because I was out there for 18 months, you see, in Kenya. And the other 18 months I was in Germany, the first half, 18 months.
How did you like it in Kenya?
How did I like it? I liked it in the sense that I had a job to do in the medical centre, which I trained for in Germany. And went up, and the longer I stayed in the army, the 5 years I was there, because the whole 5 years I was in the medical centre. But prior to that, when I was in the army before, I was a brain gunner and a rifleman, whatever you like to call it, brain gunner, rifleman, right from the France, or when I joined up, right to the end of the war. And then I got that job as a batman, because I didn't want to do sort of duties with the battalion. So I got the light job of doing a batman and whatnot, for the ranks of officers. And then I got demobbed. I come out for 3 years and went back in again. And I instead of going back to the officers' mess again as a batman, which I did for a little while, but there was an opening for somebody in the medical centre, you see. And I took that job up.
But did you like East Africa?
Did I what?
Did you like East Africa?
I did. On one occasion, yes, I didn't mind it really, I suppose. On one occasion, I got called out by my medical officer to me. He said, can you get in the ambulance and go around to the village, African village? And there's an old soldier from the First World War, African, even African. He was a chief of this little, in a boomer, what they call a boomer? As a little village surrounded by fencing. And we went with the ambulance and went to the village, and the chief said to me, he said, I got seven wives, he said, one of them is sick. Could I look after her? See, find out what's wrong with her, one of his wives. Anyway, I went and see her, looked at her. I had authority to go there and do it, you see. Well, I went and see her, and she explained to him, or he explained, because he could speak, being an old soldier from the First World War, and he was about 80 years old, and he had ribbons, he did, from the First World War, because he fought in the East African War in the First World War, you see. Anyway, he asked me if I could look at her and see what's wrong, and after he explained to me what her aches and pains were, I decided to give her a good shot of penicillin, which I did, which I always carried with me in my medical gear. And I gave her a good shot of injection in the backside. And after a few minutes, she was as right as rain. And she was as pleased as punch, and so was he. And he said, how can I pay you? He said, I've got eight boys, I've got seven boys there. He said, which one do you want? So I didn't say, no thanks, I know. I'll come back and see you later date. I'll come back again and see how she's getting on. I went back about a couple of days later, but she was all right. But she had some ancient pains in her body somewhere. Africans are like that, you see. They moan like hell about their ancient pain, but as soon as you can give them, as soon as they think you can give them a cure, they'll accept it. And they're pleased to punch that you've done it for them. Yeah.
When the troops like you went out on patrol,
yeah,
did you feel nervous and anxious?
No, that was we'd done the same thing in Germany as well, so there was nothing new about it really. Where we come up against the enemy in Germany as well as we did in Kenya. Only the ones in Kenya, you didn't know where. All you knew is that whoever you come up against, that if he looked a bit untidy, you knew he was probably a man.